Okay, so let's spend a couple of minutes together reviewing some of the key points in the sugyas that we have learned. We're not going to have time within this framework of a chazara shir to necessarily read things inside. As I had mentioned, that is a key part of your chazara you're going to want to do later on with the chavrusa. Now, for now, I just want to briefly touch on some of the major issues, the major topics, and then provide a framework that you can use, and then chazaring inside, and particularly chazaring inside those key makamos that were on the review sheet that I sent around. The opening sugya, Shir Psicha, we were struck right away by some of the uniquenesses of the mitzvah of tefillin. The fact that it's a mitzvah where you like literally tie ideas to your body, it's very, very powerful. And so it's a fascinating intersection of a very physical mitzvah and very abstract ideas. Something's afoot in this mitzvah. And we looked at a remarkable, at first very curious Gemara in Brachos. In the first paragraph of Brachos, Da Vav Amud Aleph, the Gemara speaks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu wearing tefillin. Versus HaKadosh Baruch Hu wears tefillin, the Gemara has a raya to that from Psukim. And then I'm not really sure what that would be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wears tefillin. Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have a head, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have an arm. It's obviously a metaphor, but a metaphor for what? Gemara goes on to talk about where the Psukim is on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tefillin. I'm not even sure what the whole concept means. How do you get into details of what Psukim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tefillin? What does this all mean? So we zoomed out to develop an important concept that we're able to apply here in steps. And that is that these Psukim, throughout the course of Chumash Devarim, at least 7 or 8 times, the Psukim use the terminology of walking in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's path, following after HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'halachta b'drachav, acharei Hashem lokeichem teilechu, v'leches b'chal derachav. Again and again and again throughout Chumash Devarim, there was one time we saw in Parshas Devarim, Perek Aleph, this week's Parsha, where it's meant literally that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed us the path that we followed through the desert, when to go straight, when to make a left, when to make a right, and when to stop. But in the other context throughout Chumash Devarim, it clearly means something larger than just whether to go right or left, literally. It's one of the larger concepts in Yahadus, but it often appears side by side with doing mitzvahs. So it must mean more than something different than physically fulfilling the mitzvahs, performing the ma'aseh mitzvah. So we saw that Chazal in several places understand that the halachta b'drachav, to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways, means to act in the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as acting, and internally to have the sort of person, to develop the sort of personality, the sort of character, the sort of mitos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as having. Rashi and Akev, on the Maamar Makom, Perikud Aleph, talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu being a rachum, HaKadosh Baruch Hu having rachmanus, and he talks about practically hu gomel chasadim, doing chesed, the inner personality, the inner character, as well as the external expression of it. Then we saw the Gemara in Sota gave many examples. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as visiting the sick and burying the dead and clothing people and so on and so forth. Throughout Chumash, we should be doing the same thing. And that's what we saw. The Rambam, the Chazal, typically speak of a halachta bedrachav, mahu af ata. Just as he, so to you. Chazal tend to talk about specifically in the context of being kind and nice and good, doing chesed and being compassionate. The Rambam expands it more broadly to the full range of human character, human personality. It's about being nice and good. It's also about how you handle your temper. It's also about how you handle your ego and being humble. It has to do with being patient. It has to do with how you deal with money, how you deal with giving to others, how you deal with making money and spending money. So those are the full range, the many dimensions of human character. So that's the mitzvah for the Rambam, again, based on these comments of Chazal, that the halachta b'drachav means mahu afata, to be like him. The Rambam again states it broadly as that's the mitzvah of Tikkun Hamidos. That is where the Torah gives us in the list of 613 mitzvahs, Valachta B'Jachav is the mitzvah of having proper midos, among them being compassionate and kind and good. Then we saw, as that already gets us thinking about this Gemara of Tefillin, especially when you realize that you can even take it a step further. The Rama already expands Valachta B'Jachav to mean sort of the full range of human personality, human character. Then we saw there are a couple of mitzvos where Kadosh Baruch was also described as doing the mitzvah. We certainly speak about Torah as Chachmas Habore, Kadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom. The Gemara sometimes would describe that Kadosh Baruch Hu was spending time learning Torah. We saw Rashi in Parshas Yisro points out that the Torah says, Vayonach v'yom ashriya, Kadosh Baruch Hu rested on day 7. And Rashi comments, he didn't literally rest, but hichtav v'yatsa menucha. Kadosh Baruch Hu had dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu, told him, the Torah, it should say, I rested to teach us that we should rest. So that's already a sort of a further expansion. V'alachta v'drachim not by mitos, but by mitzvos as well. The mitzvah of Torah, Talmud Torah, is not only a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, it's also, there's an aspect of a halachta v'drachim. I learn Torah as God, in a divine sense, learns Torah. I, in a human sense, am involved in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in some human, in some divine sense, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rests in the seventh. He wasn't tired, he wasn't fatigued, but he stepped back from his creative activity. So we too, when we rest on Shabbat, it's a mitzvah of Shabbat and a mitzvah of Lachta B'Drachim. So then we suggest, maybe it's going by tefillin also, that tefillin is a mitzvah. Chazal Baruch told us to wear tefillin, but there's also an added element of Alach to B'drachav. We wear tefillin as he wears tefillin, but in what sense does Chazal Baruch wear tefillin? So the answer to that lies in the second half of that Gemara in Brachas Davav, where the Gemara says, well, what are the psukim in Chazal Baruch tefillin? The Gemara has a list of psukim that speak of the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael. And the Gemara says that explicitly. And the idea is that Chazal Baruch takes pride, he decorates himself, so to speak, with the praise of Klal Yisrael. Now what that means, with an eye towards Valachta B'Drachav, is that what we're doing when we wear tefillin is more than just wearing boxes on our arms. That's the method. But the essence of it is that we are Mishtabach B'Shivchei D'Kudshei Brichu. Kadosh Baruch Hu wears tefillin, quote-unquote, that means in some divine way he decorates himself, he prides himself with the praise of when we wear tefillin, what we're really doing essentially is decorating ourselves, taking pride in the praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're giving expression to that two-way relationship that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael share. And now we appreciate that tefillin taka is Valachta B'Drachav. Not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a head and an arm, but the essence of tefillin is something that we're in a human way demonstrating, taking pride in our relation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, much as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a divine sense, takes pride in his relationship with us. And we closed that by looking at the Psukim in Hosea, that our practice is to recite when we wrap the Ritzuas around your finger, which looks a lot like a wedding band. We have these Psukim that's three times in two Psukim speak about the Erusin, the marriage between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. And we saw that the Malbim, I'll leave you to look at that inside, but the Malbim explained that what the Psukim are saying is that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is forever, and that it's based upon our commitment to both Be'eram L'Chavero and Be'eram L'Malkam, the two halves of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's expectations of us. The Tzedek U'V'Mishpat is Be'eram L'Chavero, and Be'emunah is the base of Be'eram L'Makom. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, in turn, he will provide us with Chesed V'Rachamim, and he will provide us with Yedias Hashem. So it captures this idea that the essence of tefillin is, so to speak, wearing a wedding band, wearing an engagement ring. It's giving physical expression to the emotional and spiritual relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and us, and taking pride in that. We're tying ideas, our beliefs, to our body in a very profound way, in a way in which we are mirroring, in a human way, mirroring HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So tefillin is a mitzvah, and tefillin is also a Valachta B'Drachav. And with that, we turned our attention to the first Menachos sugya that we looked at on Lama Dalet and Beis was the sugya of the Parshios Shel Tefillin, which again was that was already the focus of the Mishnah on Chav Ches with the Dalet Parshios Shel Tefillin. And over the course of Lama Dalet and Beis, the Gemara discussed the fact that both the Shel Yad and Shel Rosh, each one has all four Parshios, but arranged differently. The Shel Yad is one cavity and all four Parshios on one long strip of parchment, while the Shel Rosh has each Parsha on a separate piece of parchment, and each parchment in a separate cavity within the Shel Rosh. Four batim within the Shel Rosh. And the Gemara then wants to know, well, how do you organize those Parshios? Just how do you lay them out from right to left? And that we saw, there was a Gemara has a stira. Is it like this? Is it Kadesh Shvai Kiviachar on the right and Shvai Mishmo on the left, or vice versa? Kadesh Shvai Kiviachar on the left and Shvai Mishmo on the right? And the Gemara said, well, the answer is, depends whether you're from the position of the Meniach or the Korei. Are you talking from the right side of the Korei or from the right side of the Meniach? Who are the Meniach and the Korei? The Meniach is the person who's wearing the tefillin, and the Korei is the reader, literally, the one who's facing him. I'm reading your tefillin, so to speak. The Havdil, a person wears a t-shirt with a message on it, so the person facing the t-shirt wearer is the reader of the t-shirt. See, here too, the Havdil, the tefillin also are meant to, in a far more exalted and sublime way, meant to convey a message. So the one who's not wearing the tefillin is called the Korei. And then we saw Machlokes, Rashi and Rambam versus Rabbeinu Tam and more or less the Ravid, but usually known as Machlokes Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, exactly how you translate that Gemara. Are they in order? Kadesh ve'kiviyacha shema v'hayim shamoa, from right to left, if you're facing the tefillin. In the same order they appear in Chumash, that's the approach of Rashi. That seems conceptually much simpler. That is the natural order. That's the way the four parts appear in, over the course of Chumash. But Rabbeinu Tam had pointed out, yes, but then the language of the Gemara doesn't sound like they're just 1, 2, 3, 4. The language of the Gemara groups them into two groups. That's where Rabbeinu Tam said it's not 1, 2, 3, 4, it's 1, 2, 4, 3. From the perspective of the Korei, it's Kadesh and Rekeviecha, the first two, and then comes Vayim Shamoa, and then Shema. So you remember Hai going to give in a simen, the two Vahayas are together in the middle. Havayos lahadadi. Shri Ragon had given the simon that the two shins are on the outside. Kadesh and Shema are the two outer parshios, and they're next to the two physical shins on the side of the bias. But of course, not only was there were several problems with Rabbeinu Tam. One problem with Rabbeinu Tam was that the Mechilta seems to say pretty clearly that the Seder is the normal Seder we would have expected, the way in which they appear in Chumash, Kadesh, Rekivich, Hashmah, and Shema. And then Mechilta goes on to say that you have to write them in that order. If you wrote them out of order, you put them into Shemus. So the simple read of the Mechilta is like Rashi, that they are, it's regular order. What would Rabbeinu Tam say? So Tosis suggests, and Mordechai said Rabbeinu Tam himself told this answer to his Talmud Rabbeinu Peter, who asked him this question, what do you do with the Mechilta? He said, well, there are two different types of orders. The Mechilta is talking about Kesiva. In what order do you write it, meaning time-wise? Which one do you write first and which one do you write later, earlier and later on the clock? Earlier and later on the clock, that's in the regular order, Kadesh Vayikivicha, and then Shema, and finally Vayim Shemoa, in terms of when you write the parashios. But in terms of how you place them spatially, not in time, but in play, in space, spatially, how you put them from left to right in the tefillin, that's when it's out of order. And that's what our Gemara is talking about. The Mechilta, Rabbeinu Tam said, was talking about the Seder Aksiva, the temporal, the time Seder Aksiva, while the Bavli, our Gemara, Menachos Lamadal Beis, was talking about spatially the Seder Hanacha. Of course, that raises a new problem, Rabbeinu Tam. Well, why would there be two separate Sedarim? Shouldn't there be one official way to organize the tefillin? And Bechlal, one wonders, well, what does it mean that there are two separate, that there's a Seder that's out of order? Yes, it fits the language of the Gemara well, but 1, 2, 4, 3, what's the rationale for that? And we discussed the approach of the Rav, Oh, and before we discuss the approach of the Rav to that, and then we'll come back to one more question against the Anatom. But the approach of the Rav to that, to sort of the logic behind it, again, what the question, the Mechil to the Anatom is an answer, Seder Aksiva versus Seder Hanacha. In terms of the logical question, why should there be an order 1, 2, 4, 3, and sort of the additional piece of why there are two different orders. So the Rav suggested that maybe the, according to Manatam, the tefillin capture both the national relationship that Klal Yisrael has with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, as well as the personal relationship that an individual Jew has with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. The first two parashios, the parashios in Shemos, in parashios Bo, Kaddish Kiviyacha, which speak a lot of Yitzias Mitzrayim, those are Tzibur focused, while Shema V'Hem Shamoa certainly have references at Tzibur as well, but have a strong individual focus. So that's why 1, 2, 4, 3 sounds out of order, but it's really, as the Gemara put it, kan mi mino shel kore, kan mi mino shel meniach. Kaddish Vayikivyacha are in order on the right, the first two in order from the perspective of the kore, the outsider looking in, who represents the national perspective. And then mimino shel meniach, the person who's wearing the tefillin, the first two in order on the right are Shema and V'Hayom Shema. Those are in order, and those are the two parshios that have more of an individual focus. So it's not only, as Rabbi Yaakov Emden said, that there are two sets of parshios, because these two are the Chumash Shmos and those two Chumash Devarim, but conceptually they have different focuses. And that's why the Gemara puts them separately. And the Rabbeinu Tam would say, and that's why these two are in order, the Shemayim and Shema are in order from the perspective of the Miniach, and Kaddish Vayikivyacha are in order from the perspective of the Kore. Personal, national. And finally, there was, we had done it in a different order, but one more question that had been raised against Rabbeinu Tam that we looked at. There are other questions also, but the last of the three questions we had looked at, in addition to how does Rabbeinu Tam deal with the Mechilta and what's the logic for Rabbeinu Tam, is the archaeological evidence. You saw the Beis Yosef had quoted from the Smag, Mordechai, the report had come from Eretz Yisrael, the letter had come from Eretz Yisrael, that they had uncovered the Kevri Yechezkel, and they found many pairs of tefillin inside. They opened them up, and they were tefillin de Rashi. Now, doesn't that prove that back in the old days, everyone's wearing tefillin de Rashi? So that's a strong raya. That raya gets quoted repeatedly. We saw the Drisha had a response to that. How would Rabbeinu Tam respond? So the Drisha quotes his Rebbe. We're not sure if he's referring to his Rama or the Maharshal. Both were Rebbeim of the Drisha. The Drisha quotes Mori. My Rebbe said, nah, you're right, you found archaeological evidence, but what does it tell you? You have to figure out how to interpret it. Yes, you found many tefillin de Rashi. Maybe they were put into Shemus for that reason, because they were a puzzle. You found them buried. So they were made. I don't know that they were held by the Rabbanim to be acceptable. Maybe the Rabbanim felt they weren't acceptable. That's why they were buried. And so you have to know how to interpret the data. The archaeological data are inconclusive, because you have to still figure out how to interpret it, which raises number one, the general important point that archaeology always involves interpretation. And the second point is that archaeology requires interpretation, but fundamentally, no one is arguing that archaeological evidence is inadmissible in a halachic context. No one is saying that archaeological evidence is fundamentally invalid. Some have made that argument in the context of Tchelas, because in terms of the, you know, whether or not one accepts this, the Murex Trunculus Tchelas, so as I'm sure you all know, a vigorous debate about that. And one of the arguments against is, one of the arguments for is a tremendous amount of archaeological evidence in favor of identifying this as Tchelas. And some of the pushback is, well, some say, well, Halacha doesn't recognize archaeology. So that's a hard argument to make. Because you see here, even the Drisha, who pushes back against the archaeological Kasha and Tam, doesn't say archaeology is off limits. He just says you have to know how to interpret. Now, again, that's a good point in Tchelos too. You have to see what's the evidence and how to interpret it. But it does not seem like we, you know, categorically, you know, leave archaeology out of the context of halachic discussions. Halacha Lamaisa, we saw that from the time of the Rashba and the Rush and on, later we showed him, it's no longer a machlokas Rashi and Tam, as it was in earlier generations, this way or that way. We saw already going back to the days of the Gaonim, machlokas Shimusha Rabba versus Rav Haigon or Shira Gaon, machlokas Rashi and Tam, and a couple of generations later, machlokas Rambam and the Ravid, who held like Rav Tam, or more or less held like Rav Tam. But already at the end of the period that we showed him, halacha lamaisa, the Rashba and his Rabbein, Ramban and Rabbein Yonah, they hold like Rashi, absolutely. The Rosh doesn't say a whole lot of Tom, absolutely. He says we should do both. It's just Suffolk, and this is an important question. So you should be Machmer like both. So in the middle of the period that we showed him, it's a Machlokas, Ashkenazim, and Sfardim. The Rashba, Rabbein Yonah, the Ramban, the Sfardim, they're all saying Rashi, Rambam all the way. The Rosh Ashkenazi is saying, no, we should be Machmer for both. Later on, the Beis Yosef, of course, the end of the period that we showed him, the Maharil was an Ashkenazi. He said, we do not follow Rabbeinu Tam at all. We follow Rashba. We follow Rashi Rambam. As a Shulchan Aruch, it says, Mikra Din, you just wear Rashi. And some great tzaddikim are Machmir to cover their bases like the Rosh, to follow the Rosh, and then wear both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin. If you need to leave, by all means, feel free to go. If you want to stay for another few minutes, I'm glad to work through the third sugya as well. Okay, so let's move on to the third sugya. The fourth sugya we just finished. I don't think we need to have a chazar issue. We just finished the fourth sugya earlier today. And we did some wrap-up at the end of Shir earlier this morning, but let's review the third sugya as well. Moving from Daf Lamed Dalid to Daf Lamed Hey, and moving from the focus on the Chefs of Shel Tefillin, how you construct Tefillin, to our primary focus this summer, which is on the Hanachas Tefillin, the wearing of Tefillin. And the first topic, when the Gemara shifts gears from the Chefs of Tefillin to the Hanachas Tefillin, on the course of Daf Lamed Hey, Lamed Hey Beis, the first topic that Gemara turns its attention to is the question of the bracha. And specifically, within the world of Birkas HaTfilin, the question Gemara takes up on Lamed Hey Beis is, when do you say the Birkas HaTfilin? We, early this morning, wrapped up sugya number 4, which is, what do you say, or how many brachas do you say? But the first question, Lamed Hey Beis, is, when do you say the bracha on tefillin? And the Gemara said, first Mishas Hanacha. Then the Gemara said, wait, Mishas Hanacha sounds like after you put them, once you put them on, then you make the bracha. The Gemara says, how can that be? That's a violation of the general principle of Birkas HaMitzvos, formulated by Shmuel. It appears in many, many Masechtas, a 7-word principle, Kol HaMitzvos Kulan, Mivarecha Lein Over Lasiyasim. Kol HaMitzvos Kulan, all brachas, all of them, you make the bracha over la'asiyasam, in advance of the asiya. So Gemara says, how could it be that you make the bracha mishas hanacha? Sounds like from the point, once you're done putting them on. So the Gemara clarifies, especially the way Nebuchadnezzar Yosef read the Gemara clarifies, no, we mean mishas hanacha ve'ad shas kashira. From hanacha until kashira, in other words, clarifying that when we say hanacha, we don't mean putting on tefillin. In which case, mishas hanacha would mean after you're done putting on tefillin. Here he meant the more hanacha more specifically as putting them into proper position, but you're not yet actually fulfilling the mitzvah. Mishas hanacha ve'ad shas kshira. You make the bracha after it's fulfilling position, but before they're actually tied on. And now what that indicates is that, well, on the one hand, you make the bracha before you tie them. That's over lasiyasan, okay, in advance of the ma'aseh mitzvah. But then what the Amara at the beginning of the Gemara were stressing was mishas hanacha after they're in position, and meaning not too early, not before you've even put them into position. And that idea that our Gemara is saying, do you want to make the bracha, the Birkas HaMitzvah before the ma'aseh mitzvah, but not too far in advance? So we saw Rishonim elsewhere understand that that's the meaning, as well as the Mukhi Yosef here, that's the meaning of the word that Shmuel used over La Asiyasin. That was that one some awkward word that he used. Kol mitzvahs kulam mevarach lehen over lasyas. And why do you use the word over? You saw the Gemara elsewhere. Gemara here doesn't really spend time defining over. The Gemara elsewhere does. It brings rayas from sukkim to know what the word over means. Ooh, it's such a funny word, over lasyas. And just say kodem, terem. There's so many ways of saying lifnei. So many ways of saying before you do the mitzvah. Why did Gemara have to? Why did Shmuel have to choose this obscure word over? If he could have just said kodem or lifnei or terem. So the Rishonim explain. So the Ritva writes about this in more than one place. Nuk Yosef talks about this. Meiri talks about this. They all explain that over has more nuance of meaning than kodem does. Kodem just means before. It could be right before. It could be 10 minutes before. A day before. At some point before. But over, Shmuel chose the word over rather than kodem because over means not just before, but immediately before. You make the bracha immediately before putting on the tefillin. Not once you've already put them on, not after the Ma'aseh Mitzvah, but also not too far in advance. We show them, start talking about it. You shouldn't pause too much. And certainly, as our Gemara says, you shouldn't make the bracha when there's still other preliminary steps that need to be done. You should not even start saying the bracha while you're busy taking the tefillin out of the bag or unwrapping them or sliding them up your arm. Well, it's a natural thing to do, but it's not the right thing to do. The right thing to do is to train oneself to do all of the preliminary steps, complete all the preliminary steps before even beginning the bracha. So I unzip the bag and I take the tefillin out and I loosen up the straps and I put the bias in position, whether it's the shalyad on my arm or the shalrosh on my head. And then once all the preliminary steps are done and I'm ready to do the next step is to actually do the kshira, to actually do the mitzvah, only then do I even begin Baruch Atah Hashem. And then I say the entire bracha and complete all the words of the bracha before even beginning the actual Ma'aseh Mitzvah. Mishas Hanacha Ve'ad Shas Kshira. Not after I've started the bracha, but also not too far in advance before. Not after I've started the mitzvah, but also not too far in advance before I do the mitzvah. So that's what the Rishonim see in the word over. And that's what our Gemara said. Mishas hanacha, v'ad shas kashira. We also spoke about why over lasyas is important. Why right before? Why before at all? Why is there an insistence? Why not say the bracha after you do the mitzvah? Why should it matter? And we saw that question of trying to understand the why behind over lasiyasa actually got us into the why of birkas hamitzvahs in general, and maybe even of mitzvos in general. And we saw two or three different approaches to this these questions of why. We saw Ritva. Ritva had one or two suggestions or two variations on a theme, and we saw that lined up with No de Yehuda. On the other hand, we saw Rambam, the way the Rav was medayik in Rambam. The Ritva in Psachim specifically, both in Megillah and in Psachim, the Ritva explains this in the first half of the discussion. What does the word over mean? It means before and specifically right before, immediately before. In Psachim, it goes on in the second paragraph that I had put on the list of the Kimar Makamos. The second paragraph of Kasar Arit, he goes on to explain, well, why? Why is this significant? Brachas over Lasiyasan. See, he says two ideas. He says, number one, it's a chance to focus my mind first, to tell myself and others that I'm doing this because of Mitzvah Hashem. I'm not just doing this Ma'aseh Mitzvah because it feels good or it's socially acceptable or it's convenient or out of rote or I think I'll somehow make money off of this or gain prestige or it's going to taste good. Not that those are necessarily bad things, but my mitzvahs are not motivated by or merely by ulterior purposes. Ultimately, the primary reason why I do a mitzvah is because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me. Name mitzvahs Hashem, Yisbarach, because the command of the Ribbono Shel Olam. I remind myself of that basic idea, and I do the mitzvah because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of me. And he speaks more broadly about being mekadesh myself. I infuse myself with the kedusha. I get my mind in the zone before I actually do the ma'aseh mitzvah. So this is birkas ha-mitzvah in terms of the expressing the pnimius of the mitzvah. Before I engage in the act, the physical act with my hands and feet of doing the mitzvah, first I give expression to the heart and mind, the pnimius aspect, the chovas halavavos aspect of the mitzvah. And the bracha definitely relates to that. And we had seen that the Nodi Behuda in his tshuva, Simon Saridal, the tshuva about L'Shem Yichuds, he had said, look, this idea of connecting, you know, the mind and the heart and the mouth together with action, that's, he says, you don't need to make up your own L'Shem Yichud for that. That's exactly what Chazal had in mind when they were Misakin, Birkas HaMitzvah, much as the Ritva says. And then the Ritva says, you know, another twist on this idea that the brachas relate to the pnimius of the mitzvah, the heart and the mind, the ideas and the feelings behind the mitzvah. He says either it's specifically to get my mind in the zone, get my heart in the zone before I do the mitzvah, or more generally, by saying the bracha before doing the mitzvah, by giving, you know, first play, the first spot, the first slot, to the pnimius, to avodas hanefesh, and the second slot, to avodas haguf, to the physical aspects of my avodas Hashem, is maybe it's more generally I'm restating, reminding myself about the primacy of pnimius, about the primacy of chovos halavavos, about the primacy of avodas hanefesh vis-a-vis avodas haguf. Both are critical. To merely have a Jewish heart and Jewish mind and not do mitzvahs, that's unacceptable. But at the same time, to just go through the actions without anything on the inside, Rachmana Libabai. You're missing the Ikar Advar. So we express again, either I say the bracha, the Ritva says, to get my mind and heart ready, so when I do the mitzvah, my mind and heart are ready and drive, they're not neutral, or more generally to make a statement about the primacy of Avos HaNefesh. And so the other approach was that of the Rambam. And the Rambam, very fast, he spoke about the three categories of brachos, beginning of Hilchos Brachos and Perek Aleph, Halachos Gimel, and Dalet. There's a Birkas Hanehenin, on pleasure, on food, on smells. There's Birkas HaMitzvahs, and there's a Birkas Shevach Vahoda, brachos in response to various circumstances. It's Bakasha, Shevach, Hoda. And we saw that the Rambam had very interesting language when he can. In terms of speaking about the first two, he didn't just say you have category A and category B and category C. He said, just like you have category A, so too you have a category B. Kishem, just as there's a mitzvah, the requirement to make a bracha on pleasure, so too is a requirement to make a bracha on mitzvahs. And there's category three. So it sounds like the categories one and two are more deeply connected. And the Rav suggested that the connection between Birkas Hanen and Birkas Shevach Hodah, the equation the Rambam is drawing, is that in both cases I make the bracha in advance to license, to allow me to do. The Rambam had quoted Halacha Beis from the Gemara in the beginning of the sixth paragraph of brachas, that saying a bracha before food allows me to eat it. Otherwise it will be theft from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I get permission, I get authorization to enjoy what's otherwise divine property by saying a bracha. So saying a bracha is matir me to eat. So Rav suggested what the Rambam seems to be saying is that saying a Birkas HaMitzvah is matir me to do the mitzvah. It's license. What do I mean, license? I'm obligated to do mitzvahs. I need permission to do a mitzvah? I mean, I could choose to not do the mitzvah? So the idea is, no, I am obligated to do the mitzvah. I don't have the right to say, well, since I didn't say Birkas HaMitzvah, I'm not going to do the mitzvah. But at the same time, the mitzvah is an obligation. They are an obligation. That's what the word mitzvah means. It's a tzivoy. It's a commandment. I cannot shirk. It's a responsibility. At the same time, it's a responsibility, which it is, it's also an extraordinary privilege to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And a privilege which, in a sense, it's almost a chutzpah. Mortal man deigns to enter the divine palace and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That's almost audacious. I'm obligated to do it. And yet, it's audacious. who am I to take on this privilege of serving to enter the palace? I still need to knock, even though I'm obligated to enter the palace. I'm expected to show up and do mitzvahs, but at the same time, I have to remind myself this is an obligation, but it's also an extraordinary privilege. So the way I knock, the way I take leave, the way I ask for permission to do the mitzvahs and remind myself of the privilege of doing mitzvahs is by saying Birkas HaMitzvah. And what the Birkas HaMitzvah speak of, as we talked about earlier today, Asher Kishon Sosav B'Tzivanu, and that actually captures these two ideas. That mitzvahs are a chance to infuse myself with Kedusha, extraordinary privilege to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and at the same time, B'Tzivanu, I'm obligated to do the following. And so this notion, where the Ritva was focused on, where the Ritva was focused on the Birkas HaMitzvah as highlighting the Avodas HaNefesh, the Pnimius, the heart and mind, the ideas and the feelings of the mitzvah, the Rambam seems to be focusing on, according to the Rav, on the Birkas HaMitzvah as highlighting the privilege aspect of the mitzvah. The fact that mitzvah, while it's a commandment, obligation, responsibility, it's also an extraordinary privilege, and the bracha gives words to that. And that's the way I get licensed to do a mitzvah. So that's another explanation of what the Birkas HaMitzvah is all about, and as a result, why it is the Birkas HaMitzvah, it needs to be in advance. For the Ritva, it comes in advance because it's a preparation, mental and emotional preparation for the mitzvah. For the Rambam, it's permission to do the mitzvah. So I need to take permission before I engage in the mitzvah. And then finally, in this sugya, the bottom of the name of Bez, in addition to talking about what the din is, over la siyasa means in advance and right before, and talk about why we need over la siyasa, approach of the Ritva and the Rambam, which got us into two larger approaches to why we make Birkas HaMitzvah at all. The final point of the sugya, which we touched on lightly, was Tosis has a machlokas ben Tamar ben Elio about something very tefillin specific. What do you actually do with your tefillin every day? Ben Elio is of the opinion that you actually have to tie a fresh knot every day. The mitzvah is literally ukshartam. You have the ritzuas untied, you put the tefillin on, you actually tie the knot on location. Whereas Ben Tam said, no, the knot's already made. And as a matter of fact, Ben Tam says, the knot has to be already made. It needs to be a kesher shel kayama. It needs to be a permanent knot. That's what Avinezer points out. But when we say to tie, we mean hiduk, to tighten the knot in place. And that was the machlokas, how to read the language of our Gemara. Mishas hanachav adshas kishira, from placement until tying. What do you mean tying? Now the Gemara uses the language kishira, and the Torah uses the language ukshartam. Rabbi Eliyahu of Paris, Tosa quotes, understood, literally, you tie the knot afresh. And Tom said, no, it means you're using the knot. It's not the verb, tying, but it's about the knot, the noun, the item. Hiduk, it's tightening the knot in place. You're accessing and using the knot, but not actually making a knot. We possibly, as you know, we pass Nagari of Tom against Rabbi Eliyahu. We assume that you do not have to make a fresh kesher, a fresh knot with a K, every single day. Rather, you leave the kesher in place, you just tighten. Halacha l'maisa, you're supposed to make the bracha, putting all the pieces together, after the bias of the tefillin is in position, but before it's tight, you say the bracha, and then once you're done with the bracha, then you do the hiduk, then you do the tightening, which is Rabbi Tam translated, ad shas kshira. Okay, yeshakaya chevrim.